We're continuing the book of Judges, and the Jews were given into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. We're up to what's called the 13th chapter, and we have a man from the tribe of Dan. The tribe of Dan has a tiny territory. If you look at your maps over here, Dan's territory is just west of Benjamin, and Dan is bordering with the Philistines, so it's only natural that Dan is the one that has the prime contention with the Philistines. So this man comes from the city of Tzorah, which is today in the Benjamin region. Today, what's called the Benjamin region extends to Tzorah and Eshtol. We have an Eshtol city council today. But that's, the area of Beit Shemesh is bordering on Dan territory. The tribe of Dan has an area called Tzorah, and there's a man from the tribe of Dan. The tribe of Dan, we will discover, is going to be very problematic. They will be the source of paganism in the Jewish people. After the story of Samson, we will learn the story of Pesel Micha, and we will learn how the tribe of Dan expanded their territory to the north, to what's called the Chatzbani, the area up north where, if you look on the maps over here, all the way up north, you have a little enclave here of the tribe of Dan. And the tribe of Dan is where the Jordan really begins, the Jordanian River begins. And they established this idol that we will learn about in their midst. And so throughout the period of Judges and Kings, they have a big issue with idol worship all the way up north, the tribe of Dan. But right now, the tribe of Dan has a pious man in their midst named Manoach. And Manoach and his wife are both barren. And so every time that Ivtzon, you remember we learned about Ivtzon, he had 30 sons and 30, he had 40 sons. No, that was Avdon ben Hillel. Ivtzon had 30 sons and 30 daughters. He married them all off, and they all died in his lifetime. Our sages say every time he made a wedding, he wouldn't invite Manoach, even though they were both great sages of the time. He would not invite Manoach. So he was punished that he had to witness how all his children died in his lifetime. Now, he lived a long life. He lived to 400 years. That's a long life. He did it for a reason. He figured he doesn't have children of his own. It's probably not a good idea to invite him to a wedding. You know, he's never going to marry off his own kids. When in fact, later on, Manoach had a child, as we will learn. So Manoach and his wife can't have kids. And an angel appears to the woman and tells her, I know you're barren, you can't have kids, but you're going to become pregnant. You're going to have a child. I want you to be careful not to drink wine or old wine. And don't eat food that's defiled. You have to live a life of purity now. Don't eat anything that's prohibited to a nazir. A nazir is one who takes on a vow that they will not drink wine. So, you are now going to be pregnant. You'll give birth to a child. And you should not cut off any hair. The head on his hair should never be cut. Because he is going to be a nazir from the time he is born. And he will begin the great redemption of the Jewish people from the hands of the Philistines. That's, in fact, what he does. He begins. He doesn't end. Until King David, we're going to have an issue with the Philistines. So she comes home and she tells her husband, who is one of the leaders of the Jewish people, he is one of the links in the chain of Jewish heritage, as Maimonides and the Machzor Vitri. Rashi had a student, Rabbi Simcha of the city of Vitri, and he wrote a commentary on the Siddur. And in the beginning of his commentary, he discusses our tradition and the links, how the tradition passed. And one of those links is Manoach. He's one of the links of our tradition. So she tells her husband, a prophet came to me, a man of God. He seemed so holy, like an angel. And I didn't ask him where he's from, and he didn't tell me his name, but he told me that I am now pregnant, and I'm going to have a child, and I have to be careful not to drink wine or anything else that's prohibited to a Nazir, because the child should be a Nazir from the minute he's born. So Manoach davens to Hashem, and he asks for the prophet to come back. He doesn't realize that it is an angel. So Hashem fulfills his request. The angel appears again to the woman, and she runs home and tells her husband, and he comes out with her, and he asks him, "Are you the one who spoke to the woman?" He says, "It is I." He says, "Tell us what we wish your words come true. What exactly are we supposed to do?" The angel has told them something they never heard of before. So the angel says, "Just as I told her, she should be careful not to eat anything that comes from a grape. She's not allowed to drink wine. She's not allowed to eat anything defiled, anything that's prohibited to a Nazir." And Manoach says, "Can we prepare a meal in your honor? We'll slaughter a young goat." And the angel says, "If you offer me food, I won't eat it. But you can offer an Ola sacrifice to Hashem." Now, Manoach thinks it's a prophet of Hashem talking to him. If it's a prophet of Hashem, so he is now telling him to transgress, because we have a temple, we have a miniature temple in the city of Shiloh. And from the time they erected the altar in Shiloh, it was prohibited to bring a private sacrifice in your own backyard. So here the prophet's telling him, you can offer an Ola sacrifice in honor of Hashem. So Manoach knows that we have a rule, Horas Shah. If a prophet tells us on a one-time basis, you can do something that seems like a transgression, this Shabbos you could drive your car. So we listen to him on a one-time basis. There is that rule that a prophet can tell you on a one-time basis not to do a mitzvah. If they tell you this mitzvah is no longer relevant, then they're a liar. Then they're a false prophet. We don't accept them. If they say on a one-time basis, I want you to do some pagan activity, then we don't accept them, even on a one-time basis. But if they just say, I know ordinarily you're not supposed to bring a sacrifice outside the temple, now you could. So Manoach agrees, fine. He asks him, what's your name? When your prophecy comes true, we'll honor you. So he says, you can't understand my name. My name is beyond your comprehension. He's an angel, right? Manoach's about to find that out. So he designates a rock and he puts the young goat, he slaughters it, places it on the rock, and he brings an offering with it. And suddenly a fire shoots up from the rock and shoots up to the heaven. And the angel goes up with the fire up to heaven. And suddenly they realize they just witnessed the miracle. They fall on their faces. And Manoach tells his wife, we're going to die. We're going to die. We just saw an angel. And she says, if Hashem wanted us dead, he wouldn't have told us such good news. He wouldn't have shown us all these things. So that's why I introduced it with the understanding that he was a giant, meaning the story certainly doesn't present him in a good light. Meaning right. When the story stresses he appeared to her.
Was the wife on a higher level than he was?
So one opinion in our sages is that he wasn't learned at all. But I didn't quote that because it seems like Maimonides and Rabbi Simcha of Vitri don't go with that opinion. So that's why I didn't want to understand it. I didn't want us to learn it that way. We do have to wonder why the angel appeared to her twice. He wanted to talk to the angel. And we do have to wonder why the Navi points out to us that he thought they're going to die. And she explained to him, no, that doesn't seem like that's what's going to happen. So she has a child. And she names him Shimshon. The word Shimshon could mean fortification. A wall, a fort that's built around the city is called the Shemesh. Shimshon could also mean named after the sun. So Shimshon grows up, and he is blessed that he has limitless seed. He can impregnate 5 million women. He has no limit to his seed. And he goes to his first battle in the camps of Dan. There's some kind of battle that happens between Sora and Eshtol. You guys can see that on the map. Those are two cities in the Dun region. And he goes to a war there, and there he recognizes for the first time that Hashem has blessed him with extraordinary strength. Our sages tell us that Shimshon was crippled in both his legs. So Shimshon walked on crutches. Now we have to imagine the sight. You have a young man who's never cut his hair. So he's got this huge amount of hair all wrapped around his head. He's never cut his beard, so he's got this huge beard. He's as broad as about a building. I mean, he's as broad as from this side of the building to that side of the building. So he's a, you know, big, big man walking on crutches. He can't support his feet won't support him. So Shimshon sees in this first war between Tzara and Eshtol that Hashem has plans for him. Now, the rest of the story is going to focus on Shimshon's strength, and Shimshon's guerrilla warfare and his successes, his military successes. But we have to know that Shimshon was very, very learned in Torah. Our sages say that he was the best judge that ever lived. Shimshon was the only judge in Jewish history who could reign over court cases on his own and come out with a conclusion that was equal to God's conclusion. Shimshon could judge the people without having other people, without hearing other people's opinion. He could always get it right. Ordinarily, you sit in front of a panel. The court consists of 23 people, 71 people, 3 people. There are different sized courts, but there's never a court of one. You could agree that we'll have an arbitrator, we'll have one guy decide. Shimshon was the only one in Jewish history who could sit on the court alone and come to the same conclusion that Hashem had come to on any given case. So Shimshon. We'll get there.
Oh, okay. He's in prophecy.
And he starts having prophecy, yes. So Hashem is with him, just like a person wearing a bell, that wherever they go, the bell chimes. So to wherever Shimshon goes, he starts having the spirit of Hashem with him. And so this giant in Torah, Shimshon, goes down to Timnas. Timnas was in the middle of a mountain. And so if you came from one angle, you'd have to ascend to Timnas. If you came from the other side, you'd descend to Timnas. Shimshon's on his way down in life, in a certain sense. So he goes down to Timnas, which is in Philistine territory. And it's right near his home, right near Tzorah. And he goes out to the Philistine territory, and he sees a Philistine girl. Now, Hashem has given him this idea that if he connects with the Philistines, then he can begin his war against them, and it will always be interpreted as his personal war. Shimshon realizes that he will not be able to be victorious. He will not be able to unify an army against the Philistines. So what he must do is ensure that in his war against the Philistines, he does not endanger the rest of the Jews. It has to seem like a personal vendetta. So the only way to do that is to become one of them. If he's a renegade Philistine, so then they can't have issue with the Jews. So he goes over to Philistine territory, and he has this idea, let me marry a girl from the Philistines, and then we'll see where things lead from that. So he goes, and the problem is that Shimshon is attracted to her, meaning his plan was ordained by Hashem. It was correct. But there was an aspect of it that was incorrect. And that is that he was attracted to her. He shouldn't have been looking. He went looking. And our sages say that his plan was right, but he shouldn't have looked for the attractive girl. He should have went. Now, it's true that she converted to Judaism. It's true that she accepted to observe the mitzvos of the Torah. But it's also true that he did not choose a girl solely based on Hashem's plan. He went after his attraction. He saw a girl, and she attracted him, and then he went and followed through with his plan. And that was an error, and he's going to pay for that error. He's going to lose his eyes. At the end of his days, the Philistines gorge out his eyes, and our sages say that that was because he made this mistake here, meaning the plan was right. The execution had a fatal flaw. And so he comes to his parents and says, I'd like you to engage me to that girl, because the modest way is that you work with a shadchan. You don't just show up to a girl in a bar and say, hey, what says you and I go out? That's he did his verifications. It made sense to him. Now he needs a shadchan to set it up. Yes?
Was it a shofi before he came to the warrior or while?
Yes.
This is after he's ready to shofi.
So his parents tell him, are there no Jewish women? Don't you realize that the Philistines aren't faithful to their husbands and that you'll never know who your children are and you can't know who her parents are and nothing there is faithful? What do you have to go doing this for? And don't you realize that when you try to crossbreed, so then you don't, it doesn't produce good fruits? What are you going to do crossbreeding here with another religion? What's going to come of it? So Samson says, Dad, I want you to get me that girl because that's the one that found favor in my eyes. And his parents don't realize that this is part of Hashem's plan, and that being that the Philistines are ruling over the Jews, this is the only way he can start his task of taking them down. So he goes with his parents down to Timnas, and they come to an orchard, a vineyard. And there are grapes growing there. Now, he's a Nazir. He's prohibited to eat from the grapes. So he says, Mom, Dad, I can't walk with you through the vineyard. We have a rule that a Nazir doesn't walk through the vineyard. Why? Because he might inadvertently grab a grape and eat it. It's like the idea, don't go to a non-kosher smorgasbord. You're going to say, I'm not going to eat anything. Yeah, everyone's eating. Before you notice, you might end up eating something. Don't walk into a non-kosher restaurant. Don't go to a non-kosher event. You won't be thinking. And who knows? They'll serve you a tequila and you won't realize it. So, you guys know what a tequila is? You know what a tequila is. Okay. You want to explain to them what a tequila is? It's an alcoholic drink in which they age a worm. And it absorbs the taste of the worm. So that's not kosher.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know. Then they're not real tequilas. Okay. At any rate, so Samson tells his parents, I'm not going to walk through the vineyard. I'm going to go around. You guys go through it. I'll go around. So he starts going around, and he's attacked by a young lion. And he suddenly has a heavenly inspiration. And he grabs the lion and grabs it by its two legs and tears it in two. Now, he doesn't have a weapon. He comes down to his parents, and as we will see, this is a recurring theme in Judaism. He doesn't tell them anything. This is a recurring theme that the leaders of Israel are modest. And so Samson comes down to his parents, and he doesn't say what just happened. Doesn't say anything. So he goes down and has his first date with her, and everything seems great. So they agree they're going to get married, and he talks to her about Judaism, and she undergoes a conversion. And then he comes back to marry her, and en route, he goes over to see, hey, I wonder what happened with that carcass. What happened with that lion I killed, right? So he comes to the lion, and he finds it. He finds the carcass that bees made a hive in it, which doesn't sound so far-fetched, because I know that bees like my beer, too. You know, a lion is like a gingy, so it could be they were attracted to that color. They are attracted to gingies, you know. I have relatives that are girls, that they have these big clumps of hair on their head, and bees are always attracted to that too. Samson grabs some honey from the carcass of the lion, which should make us wonder why was he okay eating something from a carcass of a dead animal. And he brings his father and mother, he brings them some honey, honeycomb, and he doesn't tell them where he's brought it. And his father goes down and closes the deal. And Samson comes and makes a party. That was customary in those times in Philistine territories. So the Philistines give him 30 buddies. The ancient custom in Jewish culture also was that people would spend the week of Sheva Brachos in their house every day having a party with friends. Sheva Brachos used to be in your own house. You would host the event, and people would come, your friends would come to your house, and you'd have a festive meal together in your house. That's the ancient custom of Sheva Brachos. So they set up these 30 guys who are going to spend the 7 days partying with Shimshon and his wife. So Shimshon tells them, let me tell you a riddle, and you have 7 days of the party to give me the answer, and if not, you'll give me 30 covers and 30 suits. And if you can't figure it out, so that's easy, you'll pay one apiece. And if not, then I'll give you each one apiece of those. So they say, fine, great. So he tells them, okay, from the consumer came out food, and from the powerful one came out sweet. Now, what's he alluding to? He's possibly alluding to his wife. From the consumer, the Philistine people who are consuming the Jewish people, came out food, came out a wife for me. And from the powerful one came out sweet. You guys are always the powerful ones against the Jewish people. And from you came out the sweet wife that I just got, right? That's the marriage. But he says no. He's alluding to the lion. From the lion came out the honey, right? So they spend the time the Sheva Brachos trying to figure it out. And by the seventh day, they tell Samson's wife, you better get us the answer, because otherwise we're burning your father's house down on you and him, and your whole family's going to die. So Samson's wife is stuck. What's she supposed to do? And in truth, she was stuck. You know, she's going to tell her husband, they're threatening to kill my father's family. You know, when a woman's threatened by the mob, is it a far-fetched thing that she'll give in and give away her husband's checkbook or something because they might kill her and her father's family? You know, Samson's wife is understandable. Last year, his buddies, these new buddies, the 30 guys who were partying with him. No, the Philistines. 30 Philistines who were set up to party with him. What?
There weren't Jews there? There were just Philistines?
Seems that way, right? So last year when we learned this story, we paused and sidetracked for about 4 months and studied Ramchal. You guys heard of Ramchal? Rav Moshe Chaim Latzato. He wrote the work. Which work? What did Ramchal wrote? Mesilat Yesharim. So he was also a playwright, and he wrote a beautiful play about Samson and Delilah. And we studied that play, and as we studied that play, we studied what insights Ramchal was really teaching us. Now, it's available online. You guys can listen to it online. But part of what I'm explaining here comes from that play. So Samson's wife begs him, and she says, you know, you don't love me. You don't. You just hate me. Because now this is a classical female ploy. Prove to me you love me. If you really loved me, then you would. You know, you told everyone a riddle. You didn't tell me. Now, one of the things women hate most is when you keep a secret from them. And he tells her, you know, I didn't tell my parents, I'm going to tell you. That's a very interesting line. Don't try that with your wife. So she spends all 7 days of Sheva Brachos crying. Boy, what a Sheva Brachos. Supposed to be the happiest time, right? We're partying, we're celebrating that we're married. And she spends the 7 days crying and saying, if you really love me, you tell me. And she drives him crazy. So he tells her on the seventh day. And she tells them. And on the seventh day, before sunset, they tell him, what's sweeter than honey? What's more brazen? What's more powerful than a lion? And he says, if you guys wouldn't have been with my wife, you wouldn't know the answer. And he goes down to Ashkelon. Look at your maps, you'll see that's one of the major cities, the port city of the Philistines, Ashkelon, until today. We have this big city here right near the sea. And he kills 30 Philistines, and he takes their suits and brings them to the people who told him the riddle. And he goes back home to his father's house. So his wife, who's left stranded, takes on one of these new buddies, right? And marries them. Now, by Jewish law, that's punishable by death. You know, she's committing adultery. By non-Jewish law, well, non-Jews decide to live together. They're married. They decide we're separate. They're not. So by non-Jewish law, what she did made a lot of sense. You don't like me anymore. You left me. So I guess we're not married anymore, right? By Jewish law, you need a divorce contract. Doesn't work that way. But by non-Jewish law, from the seven Noahide laws, when two people decide they're living together, they're married. He decided he left. She figured, okay, it's over, it's over. So the time has come for harvest. It's harvest season. And Shimshon wants to get back together with his wife. So he comes with a gift. And he tells her father, let me go see my wife. Now, her father, I guess, had a separate room for her in his house, like many parents did. And her father said, you know, I thought you hated her. I thought you guys were done. So I gave her to be married to your friend. But she has a younger sister who's much better than she is. Why don't you take her instead? So Shimshon says, okay, this time I have every right to punish the Philistines. That's it. Now I'm going to teach you guys a lesson. And Shimshon, it's harvest season here in Israel, so we only have rain in the winter. When the summer comes, it's dry. That's why people can plan an outdoor wedding, an outdoor bar mitzvah. It doesn't rain for 4 to 6 months. You have no rain, right? From Pesach till Sukkot, you don't have rain. That's the way the seasons work here. So everything's really, really dry. That's why the new method that the Palestinians are using today is that they make fires at the end of the summer. So they've killed many people that way. because everything is dry, so it's very easy to make a fire. Think back a few hundred years ago when they didn't have fire trucks and they didn't have airplanes who could dump water. So then if you can create a massive fire, then the country has a very, very difficult time fighting that fire. So what Samson does is he captures 300 foxen and he ties their tails together in pairs. He has 150 pairs of foxen. And then he puts in between their tails torches. And now the fox, each one's going to pull in another direction. And the fire will start spreading. And he lets the fox go in the middle of the Philistine fields. Now, being that everything is dry, so all of the Philistine crops are demolished. All their grains, all their olive orchards, everything that was standing and everything that they had already harvested, they're done. So you could imagine there's this huge fire that just ravaged the Philistine territories. And the Philistines ask, how'd this happen? And I guess someone saw, so word got out that it was Samson because they gave away his wife. So now they went and they burned her and her father. So she was scared, you know, she was threatened she'd be burned. She said, I have to give away his secret. Here, that was her end. She and her father were burnt. And Samson said, maybe that's the way you guys ordinarily behave, that you just take someone's wife and give them to someone else. I'm not done. And he goes and kills another cluster of Philistines. Now, you could imagine that the Philistines were very upset at Samson. But what we see here is that Samson succeeded in severing his image from the Jewish people. Because the natural response would be to attack the Jews. Look at what one of yours did to us. They didn't. So Shimshon's plan to attack the Philistines and ensure that they don't blame the whole Jewish people worked. And that's what we said, that originally Hashem was with him on that plan. He wasn't doing something which was against Hashem's plan. This was part of his mission. We have, till today, there's an Israeli soldier that was killed a number of years ago, and it is prohibited to publish his picture anywhere. And the reason is because he led a double life. He lived here in Israel with a wife and family, and he was undercover in another country, I'm not allowed to say where he was an Arab sheikh. And he worked with the Hezbollah and the Hamas, and he would give all these sermons about how you have to attack the Jews. And all he had wives over there, and he had one wife over here. And he led a completely Orthodox life in Israel, and he led a completely Arab sheikh life over there. And then at one point where he was fighting under his Jewish identity, he was killed during a battle, and they don't know, meaning the Arabs till today don't know that he had this double life, so it is legally prohibited today to publish his picture, this soldier. If you guys want, we can try to arrange one Matzei Shabbos to have a guest lecture. His brother every so often comes and tells the story of his life, and he shows videos that you can't publish anywhere, right? So if you remind me, if you guys are interested, one Matzei Shabbos, we can try to arrange that, to have a speech by his brother, but I don't know, it'll probably be in Hebrew. I don't know if they do it in English. Remind me, we can try to do that. So,
can you translate,
I have to see if I can come out here. Okay, we have to see. So so that's what Samson does here. He succeeds. He ensures that they view him as, he leads this double life. In Israel, he's the judge. And now he's gone into Philistine territory, married a Philistine woman, and they view him as one of theirs. So we had an internal conflict, you know, the marital problem. And he went let out his anger at everyone. So Samson goes back to Judean territory, and you'll notice that the tribe of Dan borders both with Benjamin and Judea, the tribe of Yehuda. So he goes down into Yehuda territory, and the Philistines send up their men to capture Samson. They're pretty upset with him. So they've come with their army, and the tribe of Yehuda says, what do you guys want? We pay our taxes. We're paying our dues. What did we do wrong? So the Philistines say, well, we want Samson. We came to punish him, to do to him like he did to us. So the tribe of Yehuda sends 3,000 soldiers to Shimshon. Now, they're talking to their leader. Shimshon is actually the king at the time, the king of the Jewish people, right? He's undercover, but he's the shofet, he's the king. So they're coming to their king and they say, listen here, don't you know that the Philistines are in charge over here? What'd you do? So they're coming to Samson and they're saying, what'd you do? What'd you do doing this, waging this one-man battle? What does this sound reminiscent of? Remember, our previous two judges had the same issue. We learned about Yiftach and Gidon. Both of them led successful military campaigns, and both of them were then later charged and attacked. Why'd you do that? Who appointed you? By what right? So this should raise our attention here. Like, what's going on here that the Jewish people don't side with their own men? That when Gidon goes to war, Jews turn on him. When Yiftach goes to war, Jews turn on him. And now when Shimshon goes to war, Jews turn on him. Or there's a lack of loyalty. There's a lack of unity. So Shimshon says, I did to them what they did to me. What do you want from me? The Jews say, okay, we came to bind you and give you into the hands of the Philistines. Now, we actually have a Mishnah in Trumos that discusses what happens if Jews are traveling and suddenly a group of armed bandits stop them and say, we're going to kill all of you unless you give us one of you. Give us one Jew or we'll kill all the Jews. And the Mishnah goes on and says, what happens if a group of bandits stop a caravan and say, we'll violate all the women here unless you give us one woman. So it's the same halacha. We view murder and rape as equal. The halacha says, if... So there's a discussion. When are we ever allowed to give a Jew over in such a circumstance, or do we all fight to the death? So it says, let's say there was one Jew who actually deserved the death penalty. This Jew killed the prince. So by the non-Jewish law, he killed the prince. There are witnesses. He deserves the death penalty. So you don't have to give up a whole city to save the Jew. In King David's time, there was a man named Sheva ben Bichri who led a rebellion. And then he entered a city, a fortified city. So King David sent his men, they surrounded the city, and they said, we're going to kill all of you. So the city said, forget it. They took off Sheva ben Bichri's head, and they threw it over the wall. They said, you could have him. You don't have to kill all of us. So that was halachically correct, because Sheva ben Bichri was deserving of the death penalty. He rebelled against King David. Over here, the tribe of Yehuda tells Samson, they don't ask him. They don't say, Rabbi, what's the halacha? What are we supposed to do now? They say, we came to bind you and give you into the hands of the Philistines. You're endangering all of us. So Samson says, just promise me you guys won't hurt me. So they say, all we'll do is tie you and give you in their hands. We won't kill you. So they tie him in two sets of ropes and they take him up. So he's wobbling over to the Philistines and the Jews are bringing him completely tied. And as he approaches them, he suddenly gets a burst of energy. Hashem gives him extra strength. And the ropes seem to melt off his hands as he rips them off. And he has no weapons. So he has this huge army of Philistines in front of him. And he looks around for a weapon. And he's on a rocky ledge. There isn't any tree or anything. All he sees is from a carcass of a mule, of a donkey, there's a jawbone. So he grabs it. And with that, he approaches the Philistines and kills 1,000 soldiers. So he has piles of corpses. He has two piles of corpses. He's piled them up into two piles of Philistine corpses. And he looks at them, and he looks at the rest of them running away. And he looks at the jawbone of the donkey, and he says, boy, Chamor is a donkey, right? Chamor is also a pile. He says, Bilchia Chamor, with the jawbone of a donkey, Chamor, Chamor Otaim. I made piles of donkeys. That's also interesting. Chamor in Judaism always represents what? No, Chamor comes from the word Chomriut. Chomer. Material, right. You want to say something very materialistic? You say Chamor. How are the Egyptians called? They're called a nation that gets excited like donkeys. They get excited over their wives like donkeys. Why? Because it's coming to reflect the idea that the physical takes center stage in Egypt. How is the Messiah described? An impoverished person riding on a chamor, on a donkey, because he's Messiah is supposed to be riding on, so to speak, taking control of his physical materialistic desires. So Samson finishes talking, and with that he chucks the jawbone, and he names that ledge Ramat Lehi, and then he collapses. And he's dying of thirst. And the Egyptians aren't far away, and they see him starting to stumble, and he's very thirsty. And so he prays to Hashem, and Hashem makes a stream flow out from the lechi. Now, lechi can be a part of the ledge, or lechi can be a part of the jawbone. Two interpretations as to where the stream came out. He drank it, and then he had strength again. Okay.
So what's the meaning? Like, what's the deeper meaning?
Oh. So it says, because he desired something defiled, he desired the Philistine woman, so that's why his life was left contingent on something defiled, on the jawbone of a donkey. So there was a message here to Samson. You took honey from a carcass, meaning certain things should disgust you. It shouldn't just be that I need it for life. Yeah, do you want to live sucking out liquid from a jawbone of a donkey? Do you want to live off of, do you want your success to be off of a marriage to a Philistine woman? Certain things should have disgusted him. And Hashem was giving him a sign. Shimshon, think where you're headed. You might be right in your battle, but you should still be disgusted with the action you're taking. I mean, there are certain things that should disgust the person. Yeah, you might have to do it, but what's your attitude to it? And Shimshon's going to pay the price. He's going to pay for it with his life. So Shimshon goes down to Aza. You guys know Aza, right? Okay, let's look at our maps. Aza's all the way south. So he's traversed all of Philistine territory. No one stops him. He comes all the way to the south, to Aza. And over there, there's a woman of ill repute. So the Philistines get word that Samson is sleeping with her. So all night long, they bring soldiers to surround the city. And they lock the city of Aza, which has bolted doors. And Samson gets up in the middle of the night, and he lifts the doors off the wall together with the hinges and the bolts, and he takes the whole door up to mountaintop and puts it down there. So the Philistines are scared stiff. They're not sure what they're going to do. There's this Herculean hulk of a man who they don't know how to take down. With the jawbone, he takes down 1,000 soldiers. So he then falls in love with a woman named Delilah. Now, Delilah lives down in the Sorek Valley, and we don't know if she was Jewish or not. We like to think of her as this Philistine seductive woman. Well, it's not clear among our sages. Well, it's a disagreement among our sages whether she was Jewish or not, this Delilah. So the Philistine leaders, now this has come to the attention of the kings of Philistine, the Sarne Philistim. The Philistines are the only nation that have a leadership of 5. Well, I shouldn't say that. The Midianites also did. Evi Rekem Tzur Chur Reva, 5, right. So the Philistines have Sarne Philistim, they have 5 leaders, and they tell her, seduce him, figure out how he has, what he's so strong, how we can take him down. And we'll give you 1,100 coins each. So Delilah starts asking Samson, tell me, what makes you so strong? How could you be taken down? And Samson's not about to tell her. And so Samson's going to try to get out of it every way he can. And we'll pick up here. Let's watch him next week.